welcome to Hobbs and Friends. I am your host, Jason Hobbs. And I do talk often about how long I've waited to get a guest on this show. And this has to be a record. So I have none other than the author of the old school blog, The Hill Cantons, and his many books concerning that setting, Slumbering Ursine Dunes, Fever Dreaming Marlenco, Misty Isles of Eld, and the newest, What Ho Frog Demons. None other than Chris Kudelik. How's it going, Chris?
It's fair to middling. Yeah.
That was a pretty awesome introduction, and that's what you're going to give us? Come on, man.
Yes, I come out of my shell, and I am on your show tonight.
Awesome. So is there anything else if you were going to do your own introduction, is there any other books or anything that you would mention in that I didn't?
Well, I'm very proud to have in my time at Labor Notes edited the Troublemaker's Handbook, which is basically oriented to like rank and file people in their workplaces raising hell, and that was I'm pretty proud of that book, actually.
All right. There you go, Hobbs Goblins. Go check it out. The Troublemaker's Handbook. But it doesn't sound like what I would expect a book like that. All right. So let's get through this introduction aspect or segment, and let's talk about how we know each other. Obviously, Google Plus, right?
Yeah, Google Plus. And
all right. So don't forget we're on a podcast too. So just shaking your head.
Yeah.
Isn't so
North help. Yeah. Like in the North Texas side, you played in the test game for Misty Isles, which I tried to kill you multiple times. So, you know.
Yeah. I have it mentioned on the outline as that game. Like we could have a meme for it or something. There were a lot of cool people in that game. Do you remember?
Cass was it was a big table. Probably we had the guy from Xenopus. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but I don't think there's a way to pronounce it correctly. But, so we had Zach from that, and we had a number of people.
I did not remember he was in that game.
He was in the game. I actually even gave him a character that was made by Eric, like the name Eric. You know, the Eric Holmes had a couple, characters he used a lot, Xerath and Boinger, and I gave him those pre-gens. So,
yes. Yeah. Oh, man. I think I remembered that, but it was well before I read the book, and so I didn't even know what was going on then. But Chris Holmes was also in the game, right?
Yes, Chris Holmes was there. Yes. Yeah. So Eric Holmes' son was there, who I wrote in the Wereshark for him. Having met Chris Holmes, and I grew up on that set too. That's how I started playing D&D. So we became friends in North Texas, and he was in the game, and the Wereshark is an homage to his dad, and his
the first appearance of the Wereshark. Yes.
Yeah.
I only know that from doing a review on Tales of Peril, Blackblade Publishing put out. What about Billy Longino?
Yeah, he was in that. And then he became a regular player. A number of people started kind of playing after those North Texas games too. But he played quite a bit. He played a pantsless barbarian, who repeatedly had to roll the death in dismemberment charts. And still alive.
Well, barbarians should do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Jason Schultes was in that game.
Yeah.
And I don't remember. There was one other guy who you guys kept saying was part of the Hydra Cooperative, but I only see him like at cons, but I've never actually seen him publish anything. You know what I'm talking about?
Mike Davidson, who published.
No, I know Mike because he did Kill Team, right?
What?
Kill Team. He also had that. He was selling that year.
Yeah, did Warband and was a big player in my game for a number of years. So, we're good friends. I like him.
Warband, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, exactly.
Not Kill Team. Warband. Yeah. All right. I don't know. But anyhow, that was a pretty cool game. And I don't know if you remember this, but we were hanging out around your guys' booth in the area at North Texas where they have, I guess it's where you sell stuff, right? There's not a huge there's only 400 people there anyway, so it's not a massive hall where the dealers are. But I approached you with an idea where I would have a blog where I complained about things, and I would call it Random Screed. Do you remember this or no? We were talking about it back and forth.
Yeah, we were talking over the moon pies.
Yes, I don't. I forgot there were moon pies. I don't know if you know this, but did you know I started a podcast called Random Screed?
No, actually, I didn't. Oh, so you made good about on everything. Your threats.
Okay, I did. I did it. But it's mostly just about me, I guess. But I did do that. And I remember that day that we talked about that. And you were like, oh, Screed, that's a good name for it.
Yeah. A long time ago, I wanted to start a gossip column for the OSR. But, I didn't really have to do it because it just did it on its own,
That is true. All right. So you have hinted that you do indeed have a Hill Canton's game still going on. And Courtney asked about that. Do you, this is where I usually talk about what we've been playing. Yeah. Do you want to talk about that briefly?
Yeah. So Hill Canton's, as a campaign, has been going on for 11 years now. We missed our 10th anniversary. So it's in the 11th year. So we're still playing. So I played yesterday and, we're playing still kind of material out of Revote. So we had some side stuff. I mean, the weird thing. Okay. So it's funny when you start publishing and when you're publishing out of a live campaign, because you get this kind of interesting dynamic where you're making material and you know it's going to be published and you know you're going to use it at some point. Right. But you still want to use it, but you're part of the sandbox campaign. Right. So, and you believe in the sense of agency, right? That people can go and come mm-hmm. and like they don't have to take your kind of bites. And so, I made some material for the campaign for the Patreon. And then, the players played through it about 60%. They went to this island dungeon in the middle of the tarn, right? Which is this like in the Revote Canton, which is this like weird backwater Twin Peaksy like kind of place, right? And they went and played in that. And then eventually they got caught on to some kind of hook that I put out because I was trying to write hooks for this thing, right? And it took them back to Marlinko, right? They decided, well, we're going to go to Marlinko. I'm like, shit. Well, I guess we're not going to be playtesting this for 3 months, right? And so they went to Marlinko and they found this like vampire counting house that's in the square. And they went down in it. And then my 9-year-old son started playing with them. And they went down into this like big salt caverns and then kind of confronted and killed this one, apparent vampire, right? And so there's this whole like, I was writing this material, right, and testing it, and now I'm writing other material just to catch up with this other thing that goes back to Marlinko, which is my second book. So there is this kind of crazy dynamic where you're trying to, like, write things, and it's cool because you kind of get this sort of organic publishing thing where you're writing the things that are just sort of actually happening and mm-hmm. the need to do it. But then you're also kind of, like, not really testing all the things that you need to test. So that's where we're at. Yeah.
You just say you play tested it when really you just played it and then you just tried to write it later.
Yeah, exactly. So and they're constantly kind of going off the edge of the map. So, which is good.
You actually have two Hill Canton groups going now. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I've been playing online, the online group, which started with Google Plus days. Jesus, like 8 years ago or 7 years ago, right? I think 8 years ago. Been playing every Tuesday night since then with some interruption, right? So I have no idea how many sessions there are at this point. It's been a lot. And I've been playing a group face-to-face and more sporadically here in Austin. So.
Okay. So that's awesome. So I should talk about my Lost in Agata game, which happens to be live streamed this very Twitch channel that we're on. I'm also going to take this moment and just shift right into everything about you. Guess what, people listening to this podcast? We also did this live on Twitch, which was just an effort to see how it would go. We did a pre-show about, 15 or 20 minutes early, and we got some great people in there, like Courtney Campbell and Mark and Stu, and some guys I don't know. Brother Juniper, Commander Root, Lurks, Rhino Dino 1973, Total Geek the First, and Winsock. This is the crazy thing about Twitch. People use other names.
Yeah.
So thanks, like everyone. So thanks, everyone, for joining us on Twitch on this premier Twitch effort for Hobbs and Friends. What about you, Chris? It's everything about you. Do you have anything about yourself that the listeners may not know about?
Wow, God. There's all kinds of horrible things about me.
Just pick one, man. It's only a 40-minute show.
Jesus. I don't know. Should I put one that's like, you know, doesn't? Okay. I taught English in Slovakia in the 90s. That was something I did, which was like going back to the motherland. And although my motherland is about 40 miles to the west of there in the Czech Republic. But yeah, so I taught English in the Slovakia in the 90s. And that was in this little weird town is at the base of these alpine kinds of mountains called High Tatras, right? And there was kind of part of where, when I think about the old cantons, that's it. You know what I mean? It's like that, those hills, like right amongst the mountain, the big mountains. They're kind of weird. And they had sort of, you know, villages of the Roma, gypsies that were like all around that, you know, it was a kind of high concentration of them. These old castles, these big kind of like weird like town squares and these little small villages that are like plastered, you know. Marlinko kind of looks exactly like one of those towns that I lived in. You know, I installed some of the names of the kind of little villages around there for town, you know, cities and towns in my setting. So that's, you know, that's something, I don't know if people know that, but I steal heavily from my own past, like Slumbering Ursine Dunes. You know, I lived in Detroit for 8 years, and almost every summer I would go up to Sleeping Bear Dunes for, you know, for my vacations, right? So, you know, that kind of stuck heavy in my imagination. It's like 200, 300 foot sand dunes on the Lake Michigan, you know. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, those are pretty awesome. Yeah. That's great, man. Thank you very much for that. All right. So now I want to shift into something a little more serious, sir. And I hope you aren't offended, nor any listeners, nor any of our friends at home on Twitch. I'd like to turn to the part of the show that I call Counterpoint.
Over the years, podcasters like Jason Hobbs have tried to convince you that the hex crawl is the be-all end-all of role-playing game mechanics. Where's the love for the point crawl? Well, Chris Kutalik is here to set the record straight once and for all. This is Counterpoint.
It's been said, Mr. Kutalik, that you're responsible for the destruction of hex crawls, and I'd really like to know what you have against them and how you created the point crawl.
First of all, fuck hex crawls. No. You know, for our listeners out there, of course, I wouldn't say fuck hex crawls. I am a great fan of hex crawls, in fact, which I am. But no, joking aside, it's I do like hex crawls quite a bit. It is one of my preferred ways of doing certain types of wilderness adventuring. But point crawls, I do like it. I obviously... God, my one horrible, the one horrible thing that I've given RPG stuff these days is the word point crawl, which is, you know, not really something I invented. It's something that's very old in game design, right? And, you know, going back to Zork games, right, where you would be in a clearing in a forest and you go north, east, south, right? And then you go north and you're in more forest, and then you have an east and north one, you know, and then you're kind of lost. But it reminds me more of how I, having spent a lot of time in wilderness, how you kind of think about things, right? Because you clue in, the human brain clues in on landmarks, right? So it's the tree that's the big oak tree that's leaning to the left. If you go east from there, you can go to such and such place, right? So in some ways, it's trying to kind of make an architecture of a game. It's like a dungeon, right? Because in a dungeon, instead of having six exits from each room, because that's what a hex is, right? You have, like, there's a door to the north, there's a door to the east, there's a bridge to the south, right? So it's kind of like, it's the kind of yes. intentional design like that. So, when you're designing wilderness, it's, in other words, it's the kind of way you can design it like a dungeon, right? You know, a little bit more deliberate. It doesn't work for all circumstances. I think sometimes hexes do work, and I wrote a blog post about that. So, and believe that strongly, that there are times that hex crawls are a better way to present wilderness. But often when you're trying to get put in some dungeons, and you kind of want to, you're pretty sure that because of how the environment is, people need to stick to the kind of paths or routes. Point crawl is pretty good. It's pretty useful.
All right. So I often say, and, maybe some wise people said this before me, that the journey is the thing. So do you feel like you might be losing some of that in a point crawl versus a hex crawl?
No, because I do think that still the journey's there. I mean, you're talking about, depending how you design a point crawl, and I think part of the point crawl is, like, when you're designing it, it should be like the nonlinear designs that we do for dungeons, right? And there's been a lot of talk, Milan, and often, in the past, did this sort of analysis of, like, dungeons and how we should be doing nonlinear connections, right? That means lots of choices, lots of branches, lots of different kinds of ways, sometimes choke pointed off for dungeons, right? The same way it can work for wilderness, right? You can design an environment that's kind of rife with lots of choice, right? You know what I mean? So you have, like, one space that has, like, six or seven or eight connections even that comes off of it. And then they kind of narrow down into branches or, so in other words, you kind of present people with meaningful choice. Hex crawl, sometimes you can design it and it doesn't really sort of present meaningful choice in the sense that, like, you can exit six ways out of a hex. And those hexes can, end up in very dull places. So I think that the journey is still there. I mean, you can create incredibly complicated, environments with the point crawl. It's just, you have a linear ability. In other words, you're not sort of presented with each time you make a hex, you got to figure out what six surrounding hexes are. You know what I mean? So designer or someone, DM, can, like, create an environment that's like a little bit less, more conscience, I should say. You know what I mean? So,
more control.
Control, but
better. Maybe, I don't know. Better controls on the edges.
You know what I mean? So, it's just you get the ability to choose that.
Okay.
Right?
All right. Okay. So, this is another question. Were you the first? Were you the originator of the point crawl?
The phrase, yeah. Not the
But before that, it was just called mind maps. People just didn't use it with their dungeons or what?
No one had a name for it. So, or point. Well, in war games, it was point to point movement, right? And that's where I got the idea for calling it a point crawl. And point to point movement is a very common mechanic. Basically, sort of like instead of hexes, again, they would use connections, right? And which modeled, there's a beautiful game that GDW, the publishers of Traveler, did called Past Divided, and which is one of my favorite games about the American Civil War. And it's sort of like you've got, like, rivers, you've got roads, and you've got railroads, and that's kind of it. And the connections between the kind of boxes on the map are the kind of meaningful places where armies can move. And, I think that's pretty much true. We do tend to move in wilderness along, like who doesn't go down a trail when you're walking through the wilderness, right? So, in many ways,
majority of people are going to use the trail. Yep, for sure. I agree.
Yeah, you're not going to just, like, be sitting there going hack 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 through, like, machete. My father talked a lot about trying to do those kinds of patrols in Vietnam, and it's just like meaning. It's like the level of progress you have in a day, and the level of progress you have, like, in terms of, like, meaningful activity is pretty low, right?
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so in that blog post where you basically named the point crawl, so we'll say that we'll give you the origin of the name at least. What you were talking about a vector map as well, right? What was that all about? Do you remember?
Well, yeah, because a lot of my maps in the beginning didn't. I played around with maps, so I had hex maps. I had maps that had no hex grid at all. And then I started using most of those. And so instead of hex map, I would have people, and this is kind of based off the West Marches thing too, right? I'd have people say, okay, we go west from here, right? And then I would draw a vector going west with grease pens, right? Pencils, and erase it if it needed correction. And then kind of name off landmarks, right? So the hills are going, you know, try to be kind of naturalistic as possible, right? Based on my maps, right? And I'd hail contours and shit like that. So I really played around with it till I got to the point where it was like, I just need more abstraction, you know? So the point, because you get to a point where it's kind of a little bit of overload, and that's where the point crop started to come in. Yeah.
So that's really interesting. Some people talk about less abstraction, but you're talking about more abstraction with your maps. And in some ways, I can see how a map might be more useful with more abstraction and just allowing the GM to fill in the details, sensical, like empirical evidence of the details, say, or whatever. And like I say, I feel like you have more control in a situation like that, where you could actually prepare a hex crawl situation, but because you're making the trails and know where those go, you're limiting the amount of work that you actually have to prepare in some ways. Absolutely. Maybe. Is that accurate or not accurate? What do you think?
That's true. I think people say, oh, hex crawls are more inherently more, you know, freedom loving than point crawls. I'm like, well, people tend to sandwich those things, you know, and anyway, you know what I mean? Like, they tend to create a mountain pass here and a road here and a thing here, you know what I mean? Like, difficult terrain here. So it's sort of like, it's just a different way of arranging things that can be, you know, there's nothing inherently more superior. It's more like whatever facilitates good choice, you know, and I think good, meaningful choice is the most important piece of it, right? And what
player agency is what we're talking about here, people.
Yeah, what facilitates good design. Yeah, what feels like, you know, it's sort of like, you know what I mean? Like, so, you know, it's sort of like you set up a dungeon to be in a certain way, and you can set up wilderness to be in a certain way, right?
I like it. So going along with that, do you use point crawls for your dungeons, or do you only use it for like overland travel?
I've never used it really for a dungeon. I've used it for connections between levels in a dungeon, you know. So in an Undercity, I've used it. I've used it between levels of things, and you know, I've had some pretty complicated Undercities that had like a dungeon way over here and one over here, and there's a point crawl between those things,
right?
Which reminds me a lot of like Descent into the Depths, right? Because you kind of, even though it's on a hex, it's presented on a hex map, in many ways it's pretty much a point crawl, because it's like you go from node A to node B and node C and then back to node D, you know what I mean? So it really kind of is, even though it's presented on a hex map, is a point crawl in many ways.
That isn't that different than maybe Temple of Elemental Evil as well, because those nodes that you get into end up being demiplanes, where they're on a map and you're walking, but really you're just going somewhere else anyway. You know, it could be any way to get there. It doesn't really matter. So I've actually created a few point crawls that I use with my games, one overland. I'd like to say right now that the Obsidian Mounds are in no way, shape, or form similar to the Slumbering Ursine Dunes. I'm pretty sure I had the idea first, but someone else might have published theirs. I don't know. For all you Kalmata fans out there, artist theft, people. okay, so one of the last things I want to cover in Counterpoint today is this. What do you feel about this rebellious point crawl counterculture that's sprung up about your origination of this name? I mean, do you have anything to say for yourself with that? Or
they're burning shit down, like spitting trash cans, and you go forth and just burn that shit down. Cart call, you know, dumpster.
Are you truly the leader of that counterculture, or just a figurehead?
The first rule is we don't talk about fighting,
so
really.
You know. So the funny thing about having two different recordings is I have no idea how long the first recording was. So when we strip these together, I don't really know how long the episode's going to be. So I'm just guessing.
It's just like the run roll podcast I was on once, where it was like, I don't know, we probably realized it was on a 1-hour show.
So why don't you take some time to talk about your patron and the Revoca campaign? Do you want to talk about that for a little while?
So I'm doing Patreon, which is a little neglected, I have to admit, in the last few months, mostly, you know, because I've been working on four. So the problem with doing a chapter by chapter Patreon, and I was smart enough not to charge people for it, right, until I have the chapters done, is that I jump around doing the whole thing, you know. So so I've got three, almost four chapters done, but I haven't, you know, so I have to do the next chapter, right? So you push that out. So the beautiful thing about it, though, is no one gets charged until I finish something, right? And I've only charged them once for it, and that was for the Player's Guide to Revoca, which is like, again, it's like this kind of backwater place that's north of Marlinko Canton, if you played in Marlinko City, and that area, which is even weirder, right? So it goes kind of leans into the Slavic fantasy kind of stuff. So it's heavier on kind of Slavic derived fantasy issues. There's a mythic woods that the Leshies, which are these kind of like Czech or Polish or Russian mythos kind of forest giants, right, are fighting over. And so it, you know, the Slumbering Earth Unknowns is kind of like, it's like perpetually spring there. The weather inside of this forest, this ancient beach kind of forest with kind of ancient old growth trees, right? The weather changes according to which one of the Leshies are winning, right? So there's a chart for that to make it easy, right? And some kind of inner machinations with forest. And then there's a village next to it that's called Revoca Town, right? And it's kind of like this quirky Twin Peaksy kind of like local humor kind of place, right? So in a lot of ways, and then we have like the aviary, and the aviary is this big dungeon, essentially, right? It's an above ground dungeon, which is this huge glass dome with countless birds that's been created by this kind of ancient force, this ancient lord who's somehow living another 500 years, but it's a mystery. And then there's a dungeon underneath. So it's the kind of classic kind of town, wilderness, dungeon, right? You know, that we all love. And I love those. Like, so my favorite module when I was a kid was Keeping the Borderlands and The Secret of Bone Hill, right? All the ones that kind of, you know, all the ones that contain, like, here's a town, here's a dungeon, here's wilderness, you know, between. So so it was intentionally kind of created to be like that. You know what I mean? So, you know.
Awesome. That sounds fantastic. So if you want to go ahead on this outline and put your Patreon in the pertinent links down there, that would be great. As it is, I think we've probably reached the end of the episode. I don't necessarily know. Well, 7:35, we started pretty close to 7. So that means give or take a few minutes, we're getting close. So I'd like to give some shout outs and some appreciation to my patrons. So thank you very much, guys. I give out three shout outs every episode. So the first is one of my good friends from the UK, Bruce Cunnington. He also has a Twitch channel. It's like Mort01, and he does raids and sends people to my Twitch channel, which I appreciate and don't know how to do. And I'll start doing that to his channel as soon as I know how. So thank you, Bruce Cunnington, for being a patron of Hobbs and Friends. Next up, we have my buddy Alex, Alessandro Bertolucci, who is a Canadian. So we have an international group of patrons here that we're talking about. Alex is has played in the games with me with Tim Shorts, Matt Jackson, Eric Tenkar, Joe Dimesh, the lawyer. So some pretty well-known people, I think, and probably well-hated people in the OSR. Anyway, Alex, thank you for being a patron. I think he's been one for like 2 years. So thank you very much, sir. Last shout out today is Aaron Clark. Aaron has a podcast on Anchor. He is my sober brother, a brother in sobriety, and does a daily meditations about sobriety on Anchor. So he's one of the OSR Anchorites, and he plays pretty often in my Kalmata games. Aaron, thank you very much for being a patron of Hobbs and Friends. So if if people wanted to talk to you about the Cantons and your Pantons, Mr. Chris Kutelik, how would they get in touch with you?
Easiest way is straight through my email at katolik@gmail.com.
Nice. You also have a Twitter that you talked about previously in the pre-show. You want to put those digits out there?
Yeah, it's Katolik. It's just one word in Twitter land. So look me up and I'll be happy to, sprout my shit post right at you.
Awesome. So if you wanted to reach me on Twitter, as I do in every episode, you can find me at Hobbs Indeed, or the show has its own Twitter feed at OSRN Hobbs. So if you want to be super cool and be a patron like the three people I gave shout outs to today, you also get digital stuff and occasional. I'm trying to create a community around my Patreon some, and I've been pretty shitty at it so far, but I'm always trying to get better. www.patreon.com/OSRN Hobbs. I'd say the best way to get a hold of me, you can send me an email, Hobbs@HobbsAndFriends.com, or the Audio Dungeon Discord. We're actually talking about having our own con in 2020.
Ooh,
that's pretty crazy, isn't it? I should mention that Chris is kind of, in some ways, the godfather of the Hydra Cooperative. Do you think that's true? Because it seems like everyone played in your game first, and that's where came from. No?
Well, there were two Hydra Cooperatives.
Did you give birth to those people?
They just plopped out of my brain. They did. Wow.
Awesome. Do you...
they keep me sane.
Awesome. Do you... I'm not sure you can top that, but do you have any last words before we sign off?
Oh, geez. No. I have no last words. I never have last words. No, I think he plans on dying. You know?
It does sound so final. I don't even know why I asked. I got to take that out of the show. All right. I will take the last moment to thank my editor, Craig Brasco. And I know you're going to make this episode sound way better than it did when it came through on the Twitch. And TJ Drennan for the music. So at this point, I'm going to say, hey, we also got jobs to do. Stay alive and do them. Other than that, take it away, TJ.
It's a beautiful day in the game, oh, a beautiful day for my gamers. Would you be one? Could you be one? Saddlebacks plunder, but don't despair. This colony's breeding great robbers. Would you be one? Could you be one? If an 80% mortality rate works for you, for a few bucks a month you can sign up and have the hogs kill you. Make the most of another Sunday. Brew up some coffee and play it my way. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my gamers? Won't you be? Won't you please?